Hello and welcome to this podcast from Blackwell Online. My name is George Miller, and my guest in this programme is cultural historian Bernd Brunner. Bernd has already produced acclaimed cultural histories of humanity's relationship with bears and with the moon, and this season sees publication of his latest book, Inventing the Christmas Tree. This book is full of surprising and quirky details about the history of the Christmas tree. Did you know, for example, that trees were long hung upside down from a beam rather than planted upright in a pot? Or that Christmas tree fires were a constant danger in the centuries before electric lights? And what about Christmas trees in the Third Reich? Well, I'll leave that surprise for Bernd to describe in the interview. The book is pocket-sized and illustrated throughout, making it a good choice, I'd say, as a gift for anyone who's fascinated by Christmas traditions and where they come from. When I met Bernd at his home in Berlin recently, I began at the beginning and asked him where we see the first evidence of Christmas trees in Europe.
Because we have so few documents, it's difficult to say what role exactly they played in celebrating Christmas. Most likely, there's a connection with the Christian paradise tale that was performed in the Middle Ages on Christmas Eve, that told the story of original sin and the banishment of Adam and Eve from Eden. It also had a green tree of paradise, and at some point, the tree of paradise and knowledge begins to transcend the religious context of the tale and move about a role in the Christmas celebrations of the gods. Because the how is not clear, the hints here and there provide clues of the transition. The Christmas tree as part of the Christmas celebration first became popular among aristocrats in the 18th century, which could have to do with the ways in which their mansions were built. The sitting room or parlor, for example, is very good in their new homes, and this provides the place for a tree to be raised and decorated without the children seeing it.
Of course, the tree as a symbol goes back further than the Christian era. It had a prehistory in myth and folklore. And you've got the thing to say about that too.
Well, trees have always been part of human life, both in practical and symbolic ways. If you think of the Holy Sun tree mentioned in ancient Indian texts, for example, that the tree that sticks out of the ground at sunrise grows so tall during the day that its branches touch the sun and then slowly grow smaller until at sunset it again disappears into the earth. Outside the realm of myth is the slender, tall pine tree which can live 200 years and often bears a rich bounty of dates. It's well known both in the Occident and the Orient. The tree of the Holy Land and of Arabia is found persistently in Christian depictions of the star in Bethlehem, implying great significance. The time has pulled all inessential elements from the stories. When the Bible was translated into modern European languages, many motifs from the environment of the biblical stories were adapted to the local climate conditions.
Did you come across signs of opposition to the Christmas tree in earlier centuries, either as a pagan symbol or in some cases as a prophecy in the Reformation?
Yes, I did. Sometimes in expected places, sometimes in not so expected places. For example, generally you can say that the Christmas tree was more typical for the Protestant tradition, and in Catholic households, the manger was much more popular, and to a certain extent it holds until today, as you will not find as many private trees in countries dominated by Catholicism, such as Portugal, for example, or Spain. But even in Norway, I found an instance where the Christmas tree, or Yuletreet, as it's called there, was once considered a symbol and was seen as strong idolatry. It's maybe not too surprising that American Puritans associated evergreens with heaven superstition. In their houses, there was no place for a tree. In fact, if you look a little bit beyond the Christmas tree itself, Christmas itself is denounced as an artificial invention without any biblical warrant.
Now, by the time we get to the 19th century, the tree is becoming the focus of the domestic family Christmas. And I wonder if you could say a little bit about the elements that are coming together there.
Well, there are various illustrators from the 19th century that have preserved this idyllic family gathering and illustrated actions, some of which are part of my book. The celebration of Christmas around the Christmas tree developed as a family ritual, and families were often competing with each other for the nicest tree. For this one evening, worries and arguments of the family members were satisfied. It's a ritual that solidifies the cohesion of the family, while also emphasizing the division of the members' roles. In this sense, it both mirrored and reinforced the domestic order. In some houses, a teacher was invited to give a harmony or a pianist to provide musical accompaniment. I was surprised about the awe a Christmas tree could still evoke in the middle of the 19th century when I visited to Germany. Charles Dickens, for example, described it as a motley collection of art objects, clustering in the tree like magic fruit and flashing back the bright lights directed towards it from every side.
Now, in England, we believe that the Christmas tree came over from Germany with Prince Albert, King Victoria's consort. And in fact, the book makes clear that's not exactly accurate.
Well, in fact, popular legend has it that the custom spread to England after Queen Victoria and Prince Albert died in 1814. The Queen then had a 42-foot high tree decorated with very different gifts for a cost of supposedly £10,000. Well, it's true, but other documents suggest that the tree's voyage to England might have occurred much earlier. Word about the German Christmas tree tradition could have spread some 40 years earlier, when no lesser than Samuel Taylor Coleridge described it in a letter he sent in 1798 that included his careful observations somewhere in northern Germany of an evening around the Christmas tree. But we cannot say for sure whether these notes by Coleridge or other visitors really had an impact or not. So we just say this conventional story.
Through the centuries, a wide variety of things, decorations, have been put on the tree and under it. I wondered if you could pick out some of your favorite examples.
I found a model, for example, which is addicted to hanging little minister, small dwarf-like creatures on the Christmas tree. If favorite examples, the questions also include odd ones, I could also cite another example. The problem doesn't come too much as a surprise that in Nazi Germany, while obscuring the Christian aspect of Christmas and lightening its heavenly, some people decorated their trees with swastikas or even put one on the top of the tree. My personal choice would include trees that just have a small number of lights, only with one to less or small.
Now, I was interested to read in the book that tree growers are still trying to create the perfect tree by crossing and selective breeding. What for them represents the ideal tree?
But they are trying to produce nothing less but the perfect tree, which follows the common logic of any marketable object. And the primary challenge is to find trees that dry slowly, so they can be kept longer, that do not represent such a significant fire hazard, and that still have the desired attractive appearance. But of course, what is attractive different by different people. The cultivation of trees for use at Christmas has become an industry that we The cultivation of trees for use at Christmas hasn't become an industry that leaves nothing to chance. There's a lot of money involved, we have to remember that. Every year about 35 million real trees are used for this purpose in the United States, and more than 50 million in Europe. I personally believe that trees don't have to be so perfect, and that even imperfections have a charm of its own. Just as it's with people. People whose lives are perfect in every way can be born.
And I want to ask you as a student about what your own tree looks like, and whether you have a favourite public tree.
But I have to admit, and it may sound a little bit odd because I've written this book about Christmas trees, but I never had a Christmas tree myself. But I like trees erected in the public sphere, both natural and artificial ones. My preference goes for artificial ones, cone-shaped, iridescent ones. That's a very playful interpretation of the idea of the Christmas tree.
Bernd Brunner. Inventing the Christmas Tree is out now in hardback. For more information about this book, as well as Bernd's previous publications and several million other titles besides, go to blackwell.co.uk. That's all for this edition of the Blackwell Podcast, but I'll be back again soon with another programme. You can make sure you never miss the programme by subscribing to it on iTunes. It's free, quick and easy. Go to the iTunes store and type Blackwell Podcast in the search box, and a subscription is just a couple of clicks away. Until next time, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.